everyone to rise. We'll have Brenda open up with a word of prayer.
O Lord, our Heavenly Father, teach us to put to good account whatever talents Thou hast lent us, to discuss with patience and zeal the municipal affairs which have come before us this day, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen. You may welcome everyone and wish everyone a happy new year. Let's see. Oh, Doug Haynes over there. Let me at this time ask members of council, has anyone any conflicts of interest they wish to declare this evening? If not, we'll allow that to be entered into the minutes, and certainly during the exercise of this council meeting, if one finds themselves in conflict, notification of the chair and identifying the conflict, and we certainly will have it entered into the minutes. That being said, it brings us to the minutes of our previous meeting. What is council's pleasure relative to that? Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the receipt of the previous minutes as outlined.
Been moved. Is there a supporter for that motion? Councilor Sutton supports that motion. Any discussion? Any errors or omissions? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed? Motion has been carried. That brings us to our presentation. Then we have a supplement relative to the presentation. We've got Richard here this evening, and Richard Wyman, he's the general manager, of course, of IRCA. He's going to speak, and with the understanding of a limited amount of time, and of course, we've got Dr. Hyman thereafter.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council, and you do know me. 10 minutes I'll try to keep it to that. I do appreciate the chance to come and speak to you this evening. I want to start off by saying something that I read this year from the Mowat Center for Policy Innovation, which is out of the University of Toronto. And this year they released a report called The Vital Commons, a Policy Agenda for the Great Lakes Century. And that report, as the title suggests, focuses on issues of the Great Lakes, so healthy ecosystems, and specifically around some of the needs of the water base of the next economy. And one point in that report certainly tweaked my interest from the Conservation Authority, and I'm going to read that quote. It says, the talented people who will drive innovation and growth in the transition to the next economy want to live in healthy, sustainable, vibrant communities. Quality of life and environmental sustainability are necessary to attract the people who drive prosperity. And that's certainly one of the themes that I know the Conservation Authority has been working on for some time. It's been repeated by the Development Corporation. It's been highlighted in their regional roadmap about the importance of quality of place. It's been highlighted again by Gord Miller recently, last year at our annual general meeting, and more recently in his report on the Ontario environment. And it's certainly been the theme of a lot of other books and papers, and even it's in our own vision as a conservation authority and as a region, supporting sustainable environment, healthy watersheds, clean creeks, rivers, and Great Lakes, thriving natural areas, productive agriculture, and vibrant places. So it's that interconnection between healthy places, healthy people, and healthy economy that really drives a lot of what the Conservation Authority has been doing. And we've actually been recognized as a model of regional cooperation for this. We have a strong and long track record of achievement and a long history, certainly here in Amherstburg, in all aspects of our mandate, everything from our conservation areas, our trails, the restoration work that we do, protection of our environment, and our conservation education programs. And the success of the authority certainly relies very heavily on the input from council members from all of our municipalities. And tonight I'd certainly like to recognize Councillors Sutton and Pilon for the work that they've done with the Conservation Authority. And they certainly represent your community and this region very well. And for that, I appreciate that. Tonight, one of the reasons I'm here is to present and discuss our preliminary draft budget estimates for 2012. They were presented and approved by our board of directors in December, which started the consultation process with municipalities, which is why I'm here tonight. We do have some budget pressures that were highlighted in that report. We've had a history of chronic underfunding of levy contributions, decades of special projects that have actually been subsidizing some of our core programs. We have, as we've reported a couple of times in the last couple of years, a capital infrastructure that's long past its useful lifespan, and we have a lack of capital and operational reserves. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in continuing the work that's needed in our region. Our budget, our proposed budget, to maintain the current level of service, proposes a levy increase of about $208,000 across the region. And largely, this is to cover some of the fixed increases that we have in some of our salaries and benefits. For Holiday, for Amherstburg here, we have some required maintenance that we have to do at Holiday Beach Conservation Area. Because of some of the loss of those special projects like Job Creation Partnership and Eco Action, we now have to look at other sources like levy to offset those costs. This represents a household increase of about $1.10 from 2011, but the one thing I did want to mention is that the Conservation Authority, the Essex Region Conservation Authority, has been extremely progressive in its work over the years. In the last 38 years or so that we've been in existence, we've gotten a lot done. In 2010, the statistics that were compiled by Conservation Ontario show that IRCA is actually the 10th largest conservation authority in Ontario as it relates to programs and services. The opposite, though, of that is that we rank 32 out of the 36 conservation areas, authorities, I should say, when it comes down to support from municipal levy. So there's certainly a great deal of bang for your buck, so to speak, in terms of the work that we have done and our ability to leverage and bring in additional funds into this region. For example, and these are somewhat described in the document that's in front of you this morning, since 2007, over the last 5 years, our levy contributions for municipalities have totaled $11.8 million. And in return, over that same period, we've generated more than $16.5 million back to municipalities. Those are funds that municipalities would otherwise have to find within their own budgets. Those are programs funding for infrastructure projects, for pre-planting, water quality monitoring, education programs, and many other programs and initiatives that would otherwise not be available to municipalities and to our residents. What that means, broken down further, is that for each dollar that our municipal partners have contributed, we've returned almost $1.50 back to municipalities in grants alone, and that doesn't take into account the work that our expertise and our staff, technical staff, provide to municipalities in support of municipal projects and municipal initiatives. Because of those years of zero that we have experienced, we have obviously gone through and identified all the efficiencies, and the budget is now at a point where we may have to look at programs and services being the next on the block. And that's certainly because of the challenges that IRCA does face as it relates to our funding model. For the last, as I mentioned, several decades, we've been focusing a lot and have generated a lot of revenue through third-party and special projects. Those funds are drying up. Those funds are becoming more competitive. There's more people and more organizations looking for those funds. And that means we have to develop more proposals and spend more time doing so, which we have no problem doing. But it's important that the core projects and programs that the authority does provide to municipalities continue to be sourced and resourced adequately through levy, and we will be working with our authority board to develop a five-year plan that would see us look to get a more sustainable funding base that we can continue to deliver those programs in the municipalities, such as Amherstburg. I did want to highlight a couple of projects that are in our 2012 budget, and as I said, there is a document on your desks this evening, that goes through many more of these, but I'm going to highlight a few of our planned projects for 2012 that impact right here in Amherstburg. One of the successes that I think we did achieve in 2011 was the development of both the Conservation Areas Land Management Framework and the agreement to establish a Conservation Areas Advisory Committee. Those are important because it allows us to better manage the conservation areas that we do have, to ensure that the operations investments that go into the conservation areas are not overly exhaustive and do not require a great deal of infrastructure and other capital improvements, that they'll continue to protect and meet the needs that those conservation areas do have. Part of that as well is developing marketing plans. We have here in Amherstburg a great conservation area in Holiday Beach. We have a hawk festival that we need to rejuvenate, and we have other opportunities, I think, to build support for Holiday Beach, and we'll be developing a marketing plan in 2012 so that we can best take advantage of that. We'll also be restoring in total over this region at least 75 acres of forest. That number we'll expect to grow as we continue to find support for some of our conservation and restoration projects throughout the region. Some of those will be done here in Amherstburg, including some tree planting projects, habitat restoration projects, stream cleanups, restoration events are all being actively pursued and will be taking place here in Amherstburg and other municipalities in 2012. I know one of the projects that's been presented and discussed here in the past is the River Kennard Park Shoreline Restoration Project, and we'll look to be completing that in 2012, which will result in over 200 meters of fish habitat, new shoreline, and complete with boardwalks and a fishing platform, and that certainly will be an exciting addition to our collective waterfront. We'll also be working to continue linking our communities through trails. We do want to extend the development of the Essex-Harrisburg Greenway. We were unsuccessful recently in our Aviva campaign, but we certainly appreciate all the support we did get from Harrisburg towards that. But through other opportunities with the Essex Region Conservation Foundation, senior levels of government, and other partners, we do hope to continue to develop that important link between Essex to Harrisburg. The importance of trails was certainly highlighted in the trails guide that we did release in 2011 with the support of all municipalities. Also, as it relates to Harrisburg, we'll be completing our 10-year report on the Detroit River as a Canadian Heritage River, and there's certainly been a great deal of successes that we identified and promoted last year at the 10th anniversary event. We'll be completing the Big Creek Watershed Plan and initiating implementation of its highest priority recommendations, again with the support of the municipality of Harrisburg and residents. We'll be completing our Detroit River Shoreline Assessment Study that was started to determine and take a look at some of the structures that are out there and identify opportunities for enhancement of fish and aquatic habitat with partners. And we'll continue to provide a leadership role on the Detroit River Canadian Cleanup, which, as you know, is a multi-sector initiative to restore and enhance the entire Detroit River and its watersheds, ultimately towards delisting of the Detroit River as an area of concern. We will be, again, as we presented to our board recently in November of 2011, working with all of our stakeholders and municipalities to better document some of the impacts to climate change. The City of Windsor is undertaking a study right now. We've been working with them, and many of the recommendations and conclusions that they came up with will also have an impact in our municipalities, and more specifically to a lot of the infrastructure that exists in our municipalities along our coastal areas. So we do need to work with municipalities as well as the researchers to study and better understand what some of those impacts may be so that we can come up with appropriate adaptation plans and strategies to respond. And in the same vote, we'll be also continuing to participate, in the Binational Lake Erie Lakewide Management Plan. And one of the focuses of that plan is on nutrient loadings to the lake from non-point source and source point pollutions on both sides of the lakes. And we'll be looking, hopefully, to address the problem of harmful algae blooms that we did see in Lake Erie this past summer as well. Finally, a couple of points on completing the source protection plan that's been ongoing for a number of years. It's been funded this year again by the province at a cost of about $700,000, and the plan will include policies to address existing and potential significant threats associated with large quantities of fuel in those intake protection zones that include Harrisburg, as well as taking a look at some of the softer policies such as education and incentive programs to find ways of addressing some of those threats, but maybe not those significant threats that exist in our intake protection zones and in those highly vulnerable aquifers. And part of that is continuing to maintain and manage our water quality and groundwater monitoring program, including the tributary watersheds and nearshore areas that we do in all parts of the municipalities as part of an overall regional system. And earlier this evening, I was just speaking with Dr. Hyman to my left around potentially continuing again to seek funding. I know I talked about this last year, to take a look at microbial source tracking, for Sandpoint Beach and Holiday Beach and other beaches in the region, and we'll be looking to develop that with support from university colleges and others, including the International Joint Commission. We've had some positive initial discussions on that as well. The end of 2011 will also mark the updating of our 2006 watershed report card, which will do a great job in documenting all the improvements in areas where we do need to have further improvements in our region in order to achieve the vision that we've set for ourselves and the goals that we as an authority and as a community have. I do thank you for your time, and I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for that presentation, Richard. And what's the council's pleasure? Councilor Pion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before I make a motion to receive it, I'd just like to... I didn't realize, Richard, you could talk that fast. You got a lot in the 10 minutes.
You haven't even heard me yet.
You did an excellent job.
That wasn't 10 minutes.
But I'm glad you did mention the cleanup, Lake Erie cleanup of the pollution in the water, because as you know, it affects a lot of our residents as well as Holiday Beach. So I'm glad to see you mention it and willing to work and do what we can to try to resolve this problem. With that, I'll make a motion to receive.
It's been moved that there is support. Councilor Piona supports the motion. Councilor Davies, discussion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, just curious about the, I'm excited to hear that there will be continued tree planting, and I know that it is one of your major initiatives. Can you give us a sense of the end of 2012, how many trees, newly planted trees we'll have?
Throughout the region, and I don't have the numbers specific to municipalities in front of me here, but we generally plant around 170,000 trees a year across our region. And we do that in areas of concern, in particular in areas like the Detroit River watershed, which includes Amherstburg and the watersheds in Big Creek and Turkey and Kennard, as well as the Lake Erie watersheds. And that's where a lot of the focus of our tree planting efforts have been in terms of connecting existing natural areas and encouraging and working with landowners on planting new areas in those important areas. I don't have, again, as I said, specific numbers, but a portion of those will certainly be done here in Amherstburg.
Please.
And thank you. And can you? Are you going to have a variety of stands in Carolinian
Meadows? We absolutely will. And one of the, I know we frustrated our own Ministry of Natural Resources and other senior levels of government for pushing to have a greater variety of species included in part of our plantations. We've been successful in finally getting Trees Ontario and some of our other partners to recognize that you can plant more than four species an acre. And certainly in our Carolinian zone, we would like to see that at least eight, and in fact more. Part of that, the success of that tree planting program is, and I didn't mention it, but we're going to be looking to take another about 2,500 pounds of seed that we do through our seed collection program. And we have seed collection events that we do in municipalities that we can collect those seeds so that we can propagate them, so that we can replant them back in our region, so that we are continuing to maintain the local genetic forest as well.
Councilor Pouget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. Thank you for your presentation. So my question continues along the lines of Councilor Davies. You stated that you want to reforest, and that's really good. At this time, what is the percentage for tree reforestation? I know at one, the ideal is supposed to be 12%. At one time, I believe we were at 6%.
That's correct, and when I get a question like that, I keep going back to it. I like quotes, and I keep going back to a quote from Cadillac when he first explored the region that called it the heavenly, lush heavenly area of North America. He felt certain that it was because of all the green that was in our region, and it certainly has diminished. And when the Conservation Authority started its work back in 1973, when we were first established, our natural area cover was less than 5%. And in those years, we've increased that cover. We're in and around 7.5% right now, and we're just completing some work that will hopefully better document some of our recent successes and hopefully see that number grow a little bit more. To get to 12%, which is the goal that this region set for itself in its first strategic plan in 1994, to get from 7.5% to 12% means about 12 million trees. So there's a great deal of work left to do. We've planted a little over 5.5 million or so to date, and so we do certainly want to, again, look at our level senior partners, like Trees Ontario and the provincial government, to try to find additional support so that we can plant additional trees. And we need to work with landowners here on the, perhaps if it exists, the marginal landscapes that exist in our region, that may exist in our region. What's more important to me than a number of 12% is where are the trees being planted. What's important to me is that we can continue to protect and extend and connect natural areas together. Certainly we've made an effort in the past year along the Kennard River here in Amherstburg with the acquisition of some significant natural areas and in Cedar Creek, again, with the acquisition and restoration of significant natural areas. So those two creek valleys in particular are a very important part of our future tree planting efforts, and we want to make sure that we can continue to do that.
And no further council follow-up? Go ahead.
One more question regarding our beach, Holiday Beach. Do you see the number of days that our residents were not allowed to use this park as getting better, or is it getting worse right now?
2011 was a tough year for Holiday Beach. And 2011, I think, was a tough year for everyone because of the wet weather that we did have. And certainly the newspapers and others have well documented the record precipitation, I should say, that we did have. It caused some specific problems at Holiday Beach in that a culvert failed and the water levels were too high that we couldn't replace that culvert. So we did have to keep the Holiday Beach closed longer than we would have liked. And it did have an impact on our revenues, as well as an impact on people being able to use that site. We fixed that problem. That's not to say there's not other problems that we need to address, and we're working on doing so. As I mentioned, we've got some budget numbers this year to take a look at some of our sewage issues and some of our drainage issues in one of our seasonal campgrounds. So there is certainly, we're wanting to find ways of making the infrastructure being able to support events like we had this year. So I do hope that we can continue to have more days, more camping days, more seasonal day use days, and more event days. As I mentioned, we want to do a better job promoting and marketing Holiday Beach and finding new opportunities to increase revenues through events and other activities out there. So it's certainly our goal, and we'll be developing. As I mentioned, we succeeded in having a conservation lands management framework now in place. Well, Holiday Beach will be one of the first conservation areas to see a management plan developed, and part of that management plan is taking a look at business and other opportunities. So I hope that we can continue to extend and increase the number of days available for users of Holiday Beach.
There's no further questions on the motion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Again, Richard, thanks very much for that. And certainly, as you have said, a healthy ecosystem provides for a very viable community, and we appreciate all you and our members of the of ERCA are doing in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so just before we move to our next delegate, I noticed there's two people in the audience with their hats on. I would ask you at this time to remove your hats in these chambers. Thank you.
Our next presentation by Dr. Alan Hymond, Medical Officer of Health, Windsor Essex County Health Unit, and Dr. Charles Frank, Essex County Dental Society, regarding fluoridation of the water supply.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, members of council, I'm pleased to be here tonight to talk about community water fluoridation, which the Centers for Disease Control have noted as one of the greatest public health achievements of the 20th century. Fluoridation is safe, it's effective, it's equitable, and it is economical. It is supported by numerous scientific and professional bodies. It is also supported by the Ministry of Health, Health Canada, Public Health Agency of Canada, and the World Health Organization. Over the past 15 years, there have been at least 18 reviews which have found the fluoridation of community water supply to be safe and effective in preventing tooth decay. It is economical. It is estimated that for every dollar invested in community water fluoridation, that $38 are saved in future dental costs. Water fluoridation benefits all residents regardless of age, socioeconomic status, education, employment, and dental status. There has been a lot of concern recently expressed about the impact of fluoridation on the environment. There's a lot of confusion about the level of water quality. The water quality guideline of 0.12 milligrams per liter and confusion of the recommendation for fluoridation of 0.6 milligrams per liter. The point that I want to make about this is that because of dilution of the water supply into the environment, that as a study in Montreal has shown, is that there is no evidence that fluoridation increases concentrations of fluoride in our waterways anywhere near the Canadian water quality guideline. Most municipalities use either hydrofluorosilicic acid or fluorosilicic acid as their vehicle for introducing fluoride into the water supply. Fluoride in the water supply is mandated in compliance with the municipal drinking water licenses, which are issued by the Ministry of Environment. There's been a lot of concern recently about the quote-unquote toxicity of hydrofluorosilicic acid or fluorosilicic acid. The point is with these compounds is that when they are added to the water, they hydrolyze completely. And the point that that hydrofluorosilicic acid is not studied is that it completely breaks down, and the agent that has been studied appropriately is fluoride. There is no credible evidence of the toxicity when these acids are diluted for use in fluoridated water. There's also been concern with regards to heavy metals associated with hydrofluorosilicic acid. Again, there is no credible evidence of concern in this area. Added to this, that the safety standards which are required by the municipal drinking water licenses requires that the chemicals which are used meet such standards as the National Sanitation Foundation standard, and these certify the safety of the water additive compounds, as well as mandated by Ontario regulation. Fluoride is regularly tested in those systems in which it is introduced, as well heavy metals such as chromium, mercury, arsenic, and other metals are tested, again, as a part of a municipal water drinking license and under Ontario regulation. Ontario regulations also require the regular testing for lead. So notwithstanding the fact that there is a high standard for the chemicals which are used, is that concern about any other chemicals which could be added would be detected by regular testing in municipal water supplies. Certainly, there is a need for the introduction of fluoridation. Dental decay and dental disease are most common in children. Over $2 million is spent by the health unit every year on dental programs. Over 15,000 children are screened by the health unit on a regular basis. And 17% of those 15,000 children which were tested qualified for treatment. Certainly, only 33% of the general population do not have dental insurance. 23% of the populate of the amongst the immigrants, 23% of the population in Windsor, 45% of those individuals do not have dental insurance, and low-income residents are more likely to be without dental insurance. Recently, a number of municipalities throughout Canada, and especially in Ontario, have reaffirmed the decision to continue to fluoridate water supplies. The board of the Windsor-Essex County Health Unit has been on record since 2003 in favor of community water fluoridation. And so, based on the evidence, I would recommend that fluoride be reinstated in the town of Amherstburg. Certainly, as medical officer of health, I recommend the reintroduction of fluoride into the community water supply. It is safe, it is effective, it is equitable, and it is economical. I'd like to turn over to Dr. Charles Frank, my colleague, to make some more comments on the efficacy of fluoridation.
Just before you do that, let's be clear here. Fluoridation has never ceased in the town of Amherstburg.
Okay. I was understood that there was a problem with the.
That's not true.
With mature. I beg your pardon then. Then continue.
Your Worship, honored members of council, community water fluoridation is a public health measure that has benefited millions of people for over 60 years. For its low cost, it has improved the quality of life through reduced pain and suffering related to tooth decay, reduced tooth loss, reduced time lost from school and work, and less money spent on dental care and treatment. Furthermore, anyone, regardless of their social economic level, can enjoy its benefits. It is the most cost-effective method of preventing of tooth decay. Areas which have added fluoride to their municipal drinking water have seen a 20 to 50% drop in the incidence of tooth decay, not to mention the severity. Logically then, those communities that have removed fluoride from the water can expect a doubling of their decay rates. On an annual basis, it costs less than $1 per person per year to fluoridate the water, with the average cost of $100 to $300 per dental restoration. It doesn't take a mathematician to calculate the cost of removing fluoride to the residents of Amherstburg over time. And it was interesting that on the slide that Dr. Hyman presented, one of the communities that now fluoridates their water was Dorval, Quebec. And this was subsequent to a 2007 report on water fluoridation by the Public Health Institute in Quebec. That revealed that the percentage of kindergarten children at high risk of developing tooth decay in Dorval, Quebec, doubled in the 2-year period after water fluoridation was halted in 2003. And according to the slide, they had now re-implemented that. As with other substances added to the materials we consume, like vitamin D in milk and iodine in table salt, fluoride is safe to consume at the recommended levels. Indeed, if there are any negative effects from consuming the fluoride added to our water for over 60 years, it will become logically evident in higher rates of disease and ill health in our community, which will be directly linked to the intake of fluoride. This has not happened. In conclusion, I am strongly in support of maintaining fluoride in our drinking water as a safe, economical, and effective means of prevention of tooth decay. Over 2 generations of local residents have benefited from this public health measure. Please continue to provide this protection for future generations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, Dr. Hyman, and certainly Dr. Frank for that presentation. Discussions of council, Councillor Sutton, followed by Councillor Davey, followed by Councillor Pino.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, Dr. Hyman, as I'm sure you're well aware, there are opponents to the fluoridation movement. And they would just as readily point to different studies in terms of it being toxic, it being harmful over the long haul. Has there been a definitive long-term study that's been done that either side could point to for those results? Because from a layman's perspective, I think what we would look at is, if it's working, leave it in. If it's not working, then take it out. That would be the easiest thing to say. But we're inundated quite often with these studies, and we need some guidance in terms of running through them.
Well, certainly I can provide to you a précis of some of the reviews which have been done. I noted, as I started out, that first of all, fluoride has been in water systems for some 60 years. Over the past 15 years, there have been 18 reviews on water fluoridation, which show that fluoridation to be safe and effective. And I would be happy to provide further documentation to council outlining those 18 reviews.
Thank you.
And we'll certainly do so.
Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. Thank you very much for your presentation. It was very interesting and did clarify a number of things for myself. I know here in Amherstburg that the water level is about 0.12 parts per million, which is an equivalent to milligrams per liter. And 60 years ago, we didn't have fluoride in our toothpaste. Now the level is about 0.245% in all toothpaste, and virtually all toothpaste has it. And certainly we know that you don't want to overdose either, otherwise you're running into fluoridosis. Do you have any instances of dental fluoridosis in the community? And I'm also wondering about the question, if you could clarify any. I know it's a risk for people with kidney failure. Is there any backlashes on that? Because it's hard to filter it out through the water, whereas if you apply it separately.
I can speak to the last part of your question with regards to kidney dialysis, and then I'll let Dr. Frank speak to the incidence of fluorosis, especially in our community. With regards to dialysis, is that tap water is not used in the dialysis process, because not only does one any compounds, even calcium and sodium, potassium, they all have to be removed as part of the dialysis fluid. So fluoridation in the water supply is not an issue with regards to dialysis. With regards to fluorosis, let Dr. Fine take that.
First off, the incidence of fluorosis in the teeth is not clinically significant in this community. There are some minor cases, but virtually undetectable. The benefits of fluoridation in reducing dental caries outweigh the risk of fluorosis, which is mainly cosmetic in nature. It doesn't really affect the structure of the tooth. And none of the same fundamental importance as avoidance of dental caries. So it is possible that, you know, at the 0.6 parts per million fluoride recommended, there may be some minor fluorosis of teeth, but they show those little tiny little white patches that most people don't notice, and they don't provide any clinical significance. In addition, talking, you know, 6 years ago, we did not have fluoridated toothpaste. Initially, the recommendation was 1.0 parts per million to 1.2 parts per million, but taking into account the halo effect of fluoride, you know, particularly in the toothpaste and things like that, the recommendation of fluoridated water has been dropped to 0.6 to 0.8%, or parts per million, sorry.
Thank you, and just a brief follow-up from that, and I thank you very much. That's useful information, and I am concerned about our lower income folks who don't have dental coverage, children who can't access dentists, which is really very sad, and is a real problem in our country. But I do know that also those same folks, if their calcium is low, which comes in a dietary source of in poverty, that does increase the percentage of the fluoride in the system. So if their calcium is low, which is a dietary issue as well, then the fluoride levels would be higher. Is there any effects on that for lower income folks with poor diets?
Not that I'm aware of. Again, if, you know, fluorosis was a major problem in the community, we'd see it prevalent in the low income people. Not seeing that in my practice.
Councilor Pino?
I'm fine, thank you.
Fine. Anyone? Yeah. Councilor Puglia?
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor Hurst. I just wonder if either gentleman could clarify. I don't know what the term fluorosis means.
Dental fluorosis is a minor discoloration of teeth related to a very high doses of fluoride consumed while the teeth are forming. When the fluoride levels not recurring are significantly higher than the recommended dose, fluorosis could result in dark brown staining of the teeth. But these are in areas where fluoride not recurring water is higher than the recommended amount.
Anyone else? Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On the subject of fluorosis, I received a call from a resident of the town of Amherstburg today saying that their son has fluorosis, and I, not knowing anything about it, I asked, is there a cure for it? She said, no. Could you, either one of you gentlemen, expound on that?
Okay. Again, for the most part, with dental fluorosis is a discoloration of the teeth. There, most of the cases are fairly clinically insignificant. You can hardly even tell it's there. So usually the treatment for mild fluorosis is no treatment at all, because, again, it's not noticeable. In those areas where the teeth are very heavily stained because of the dark modeling of the enamel, because of the higher concentration of fluoride. And yet, in order to have a severe case of fluorosis, you'd have to be consuming a very high amount of fluoride in a very prolonged period of time, particularly when the teeth are being developed. You can do cosmetic bonding and things to cover the discoloration up.
Thank you.
On the presentation, what's Council's pleasure? Councilor Sutton?
Motion to receive.
Been moved, supported by Councilor Pilon. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed is carried. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for that information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item.
That brings us to a reports, recreation, culture, and parks, item 9.1, a report by Rick Daly regarding bidding on Ontario Games.
Relative to that report, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
I move to receive the report and concur with the recommendation from Rick Daly that and direct administration to investigate the possibility of the town hosting or co-hosting the 2014 Ontario 55 Plus Summer Games or the 2014 Ontario Para Sports Games. Thank you. And submit a letter of intent to bid to Sport Alliance Ontario. And if I can get a supporter, I'd like to speak on it.
There's supporter. Councillor Sutton supports that motion. Discussion. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you. This is through you, Mr. Mayor, to Rick. There are, I'm sure, grants available. Would you be willing to, or are you in a position to speak on it? Because I would think that if we host that, there have to be some changes to the facilities that we have that we would host these games. Could you expound on that, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, to Deputy Mayor. The Ministry of Tourism, Culture, and now Sport, as it's known, are putting a big emphasis on sport, and they're recognizing the impact that sport has on the communities, the municipalities, and the residents. And they put significant money towards renovations of municipal facilities such as diamonds, tennis courts, rinks. So there are those opportunities that we can investigate. As part of a successful bid, there will be requirements for a bid review or a site review, which takes into account any of the renovations that we do need to make.
Follow up? Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Rick again. The initial process that I've moved here tonight is that we send in an indication that we are willing to bid on it, correct? The second thing is, when the bid comes, is there anything that can be put in the bid itself that the bid would be predicated on receiving such grants to do this, or if we put the bid in, are we hopeful if we're successful?
Mr. Mayor, with respect to the bid, there is an initial grant that goes with the bid, so there is money that's afforded to the successful bidder. Part of that is a requirement, like I said, for renovations to facilities. So we can't really say we want the games, provided that we get money. That's sort of that's putting the horse before, or the cart before the horse. So.
Thank you,
Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. Through you to Rick. Rick, what is the time frame that we're talking about? If you put in the bid, the request for us to get the games, and we're successful, how much time would we have in order to prepare, say, the track or the tennis courts?
Mr. Mayor, the sort of the critical dates for the games and the bids themselves are outlined in the report, and really what we're looking at is for the 55 plus games, they're going to happen in August of 2014. The Para Sport games, they're looking at a May 2014 start date. So we have approximately 2 years, 2.5 years to get this done.
Go ahead.
But when would we know? When would we know if we're successful?
The announcement for the 55 plus games is August 2012. So really, we would have 2 years after that. For the Parasport games, it's a little bit shorter of a time, but given the size of it, it's still within possibility. And we're looking at a March 2013 official announcement.
Councilor Sutton?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I hope that council does support this. I mean, this is one of the reasons why we've invested so much money in our recreation facilities over the past couple of years, so that we can expand our sports tourism market. Certainly, if we are awarded and we are successful, there may be further monies awarded and further grants that we'll need to pursue in order to do that. It's been my understanding that bids aren't awarded without that assurance in place to begin with. So I think we've got to deal with it in a stepwise process. and promote what we do have here. We do have the opportunity to hold sledge hockey. We do have the opportunity for wheelchair basketball, wheelchair rugby. This community is very friendly in terms of accessibility issues. And with our seniors, with people 55 plus, promoting walkways, promoting cycling routes, trying to institute walking paths on our roads as we repair them. So certainly I think this fits in with our overall strategy, and I'm quite supportive of this initial step.
Any further discussions? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried. Next item, please.
Item 9.2, a report by Rick Daly regarding United Communities Credit Union Complex five-year lease agreement for Fort Malden Golden Age Club.
It's council's pleasure, Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move receipt of the report, and that bylaw 2012-06 being a bylaw to enter into agreement with the Fort Malden Golden Age Club regarding the five-year term use of the United Communities Credit Union Complex property owned by the town. Be read three times, finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign same thereto.
They're supported. Councillor Davies supports that motion. Discussion relative thereto. Councillor Sutton, if you would.
Just a quick question through you to Rick. Rick, in the lease agreement, I see that the overall rental amount is based upon, the end of the year books of the Fort Malden Golden Age Club, which is certainly understandable. Then it further states that monthly utilities that are used would be included in the monthly rent. So am I correct in assuming that at the very least we'll recoup those costs, and if there's anything left over to make a donation towards the complex, that would be done as well?
That basically with regards to the utilities of that specific site is very minimal when it comes to the overall scope of the facility. So really what we're looking at is more of a donation type of fee for them.
Okay.
Given their numbers and sort of their financial statements.
Which is what they've been doing for many years. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried. Next item, please.
Reports from Treasury 16.1, a report by Paul Beneteau regarding interim tax levy bylaw 2012.
For Council's information, what's Council's pleasure relative to that? Which is the norm here.
Mm-hmm.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Move to receive and concur.
They're supportive for that motion. Councillor Sutton supports that motion. Further discussions? All in favor? Motion carried.
Item 16.2, report by Paul Beneteau regarding temporary borrowing bylaw 2012-02.
Again, with Councillor's pleasure, Councillor Peel.
Motion to receive and further that bylaw 2012-02 being a bylaw to provide for temporary borrowing until taxes are collected and other revenues are received, be read three times and finally passed, and the mayor and the clerk be authorized to sign the same thereto.
They're supported for that motion. Councillor Puget supports that motion. Discussion, if any? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Consent reports. There is one consent report before Council.
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move that the report as listed be received.
They're supported for that motion. Councillor Pino supports that motion. Discussions? If not, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried.
Consent correspondence. There's eight items before Council.
I will take to the consent correspondence. What's your pleasure? Yep, Councillor Puget?
That we move for receipt of the correspondence numbers 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7, and I'd like to speak on 4, 5, and 4, 6, and 8.
There is support for that motion. Councillor Sutton supports that motion. All in favor?
Okay.
On the motion, all in favor?
Never received those ones.
All in favor of the motion. Opposed? Motion is carried. You may speak on the items that we haven't, if we can go one at a time, please.
Okay. The letter number 4, the letter from Mr. Hutchinson regarding the street lighting. I just wondered if that could be referred to Public Works. further advisement and to see whether or not we have extra streetlights and if it's necessary to put it in that area.
Yeah, no, you want?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I did speak with Mr. Hutchinson, and actually the area that he's indicating is low in light is a county road, County Road 10. And I indicated that he specifically sent in a letter requesting that the county be notified that, of that situation.
Do you want to just move receipt of that one then?
Okay, then we'll move receipt of that.
And there is support for that motion, Councilor Sutton. All in favor? Motion is carried. Your next item?
Number six, the letter from Mrs. Semenek regarding a just municipal drain. I just wondered if we could speak on that item. I know that it has been referred to Public Works, but if whether or not they're planning on doing anything for her because she's complaining about flooding.
Mr. Mayor, there's a number of issues with the Jeff's drain, and very recently what we discovered, and unfortunately it was after a fairly heavy rain, is that there had been some various excavations take place towards the outlet of the municipal drain into the Detroit River, and the outlet of the Jeff's drain had become plugged. When we discovered this after the rainfall, unfortunately it was unplugged immediately, and it has worked ever since. In the letter that we see, there's another couple of complaints that we will review, and we'll come back with a report to council in, probably in the first week in February, the first meeting in February.
And Mrs. Semenek is aware of that?
No, she isn't at the present time.
Okay. We'll make her aware of that.
She will.
Sure. The next one?
Okay. Motion to receive that?
Motion to receive? You're moving to receive? Yeah. Councilor Puget is supportive for that motion. Councilor Sutton? There's no further discussion relative to that one. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
And, number eight, the letter from Mr. DeLuca regarding heritage designation, 219 Dalhousie Street. I would ask if that could be sent to the Heritage District.
Sure.
When we meet again.
I think we should do it in a motion as we did the other ones. You're making that a motion. If there is support for it, Councilor Davies, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. I think just in that regards, Councilor Davies, you want to point out the,
yes,
the item number seven.
If I may, I'd like to raise number seven, international proclamation as well. I did want to speak to this, and I sorry, don't know if you're going to be making
no
the
board.
Proclamation or not, but certainly, you know, there's so many people in our Amherstburg area. Anyone here that go off and around the world to do very good things. I mean, there's a number of people at a Rotary Club and Lions and individuals who go themselves to do some amazing work. And I would like to see not only that we have a proclamation for February 5th and the 11th, but that there we have an opportunity to possibly do something to raise attention to all of those people who have done some amazing work for other countries, because there are a number of them who have quietly gone out and done some very amazing things. As I said, a lot of the service clubs, but individuals as well, and groups, and even young people and sports teams. And I think it would be nice to be able to have a more formal acknowledgement of the work they do beyond just an acknowledgement of that week.
Are you making a motion to proclaim that week of February the 5th to the 11th?
I would be delighted to make a proclamation of the International Development Week proclamation template to February 5th to the 11th.
Make the motion to
I'll move that we have February 5th to 11th, 2012 as proclamation for Development Week.
You're supportive for that motion. Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. Further discussion relative thereto. Councilor Pino?
No.
Further discussion I have for all in favor? Opposed is carried, and certainly we will, as Mayor for the Town of Amherstburg, I hereby proclaim that the week of February the 5th to the 11th, 2012 shall be International Development Week. in our municipality, and I recognize the Federation of Canadian Municipalities' contribution over the past 25 years as a Canadian and world leader of in international municipal development. Finally, I invite all citizens to become informed about international development, to show their solidarity with developing countries, and to continue to support Canadian municipalities' international community building efforts. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, Carolyn. Councillor Peel.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to speak to items 1 and 2, 3, if I may.
You certainly may.
Thank you. The Knights of Columbus anniversary booklet, I really believe we should support it. It's a very active group in our community, and my suggestion is a half page and somehow get in the War of 1812 advertisement. It's only $60. I'm making that a motion.
Is there a supporter for that motion? Councillor David supports that motion. Further dialogue? Not all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
And also, item 3, Town of Tecumseh is looking for support for their commemorative stamp of Chief Tecumseh.
It's already been approved.
Did we prove it here?
No, the government has already approved it. It's in the process of being made.
Oh, okay. But yeah. They don't need our support? Okay.
We supported them, and it was done at the county level, too.
All righty. Thank you.
Next item.
That brings us to consent other minutes, or six sets of minutes before council.
With council's pleasure. Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move that the minutes as listed in items 1 through 6 be received.
Supported by Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Discussion relative thereto. Councillor Peel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just item 3, I don't know if we've done it. Have we sent John a thank you letter for his time and efforts on that committee? Could we do that from the town?
Certainly.
Okay. Thank you.
On the motion, no further discussion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Unfinished business items as of January 9th.
Councilor Peel.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just a question through you to our public works manager. When are you anticipating to re-tender the water line north side road?
Mr. Mayor, the plans are ready. The tender form is prepped and probably within the next 3 weeks.
Thank you.
Still under unfinished business? No further unfinished business item? New business? Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't know if this would be under new business or notice of motion, but I'm sure you will correct me if I'm wrong. I would like to bring forward the report from the Ombudsman regarding the closed door or behind closed door sessions of in-camera meetings and move that the
That's listed as the next item, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
I apologize.
At the time.
I don't have that in my lineup.
It's coming out as a report from in camera, like all the other do.
Okay, again, I apologize. As you well know, I was not I did not attend the in camera meeting.
Still under new business. Nothing else under new business? That brings us to the report from the in camera session.
During the closed meeting of January 9th, 2012, Council would report the following. Council discussed a matter which was heard under Section 239(2)(f) of the Municipal Act, being advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege relating to heritage rebate bylaw. There is nothing further to report on that item. Item B, a matter which was heard under Section 239(2)(f) of the Municipal Act, being advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege relating to Ombudsman report, and I believe the Mayor would like to speak further on that.
Yeah, thanks, Brenda. And certainly, as everyone knows, we have received the Ombudsman report relative to the complaints that have been issued. And in accordance with that particular act, we must, as a council, make it public and it will be posted on our website as of tomorrow. And I want to say very briefly that we take these findings very seriously. We want to address them. It's always been our intention to comply with the provisions of the Act. To do otherwise is not in the best interest of anyone. Transparency and compliance is something that we try to do. Our residents deserve nothing short of this. And, of course, we will certainly attempt to do a better job and turn this around. That ends my presentation. Our next item, please.
Our next item, notices a motion, Deputy Mayor Sutherland rescinding bylaw 1485, being a bylaw designating the Salmani Building under Section 4 of the Ontario Heritage Act. This matter was introduced at the December 12th council meeting.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland, relative to that notice of motion.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Due to the complexity of the information that I've received through further emails from our solicitor, administration, etc., with information that I did not have in my possession when I made the notice of motion, I would move tonight to defer this to a further date.
There's a motion to defer. Is there support for that motion? Councillor Puget supports that motion. No discussion on the deferred motion. All in favor? Opposed? You're opposed to it? Do it to it?
Yeah, let's deal with it. Get it off the book.
You voted for it?
No, we haven't. I don't know if you want it. You wanted to. I think you should have a vote. Should we request it in court? No. Are you,
Mr. Mayor, if you're going to call a recorded vote, I strongly insist.
I'm not requesting a recorded vote. I'm asking council, are they calling a recorded vote? nothing strongly to do, period. The motion is to defer. And you, three have voted on the deferral, and two was opposed to it. The motion is passed.
Thank
this
you.
Because I had no different, their council did their well.
Okay. That brings us to the first bylaw, Malden Center Drain. Sorry.
Councilor Peel.
And just to, sorry, that would be all. It's sorry, I apologize. This is just the third reading. It's already received first and second reading.
And I'll move bylaw 2011-90 being the bylaw to provide the repair and improve the Malden Center Drain. Based on a drainage report from our engineering, be read a third time and finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign the same thereto.
It's been moved. Are there support for that? Council Deputy Mayor Sutherland, all in favor? Motion is carried.
That brings us to the confirmatory bylaw. Bylaw to confirm the proceedings from December 14th, 2011 and January 9th, 2012 meetings.
Councilor Sutton, if you will.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move that bylaw 2012-04 being a bylaw to confirm all resolutions of the Municipal Council meeting held on December 14th, 2011 and January 9th, 2012 be read three times, finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign same thereto.
There supported for that? Councilor Pinault, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Next item? Councilor Pinault, there supported. Deputy Mayor Sutherland, all in favor? Motion is carried. Thank you.